Good morning and welcome to Overeaters Anonymous, a vision for you big book study. My name is Tina S. and I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Today is Thursday, May the 28th, 2026, and today we're reading from the big book and we are on page 41 in the chapter More About Alcoholism, reading the first paragraph starting with I went to my hotel and leisurely dressed, reading through one paragraph and ending with unbearable mental and physical suffering, commenting on that one paragraph only. And let's see, the readers for today, we have Mara Z with the 12 steps, Letty G, 12 traditions, our newcomer greeter, Karen W, second hour host, Colleen M, and the readers of the text are Julie G, and page 164, Zoe N. And thank you all for your service this month. We really appreciate you. Okay, and the reference for yesterday, reference numbers for yesterday, Wednesday, May the 27th, 2026, for the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 23,492. That's 23492. The 10 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 23,493. That's 23493. OA Preamble. Overeaters Anonymous is a fellowship of individuals who, through shared experience, strength, and hope, are recovering from compulsive overeating. We welcome everyone who wants to stop eating compulsively. There are no dues or fees for members. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, neither soliciting nor accepting outside donations. OA is not affiliated with any public or private organization, political movement, ideology, or religious doctrine. We take no position on outside issues. Primary purpose is to abstain from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors and to carry the message of recovery through the 12 steps of OA to those who still suffer. Our sole purpose, OA's fifth tradition states, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. At a Vision for You Big Book study, our message is that people who suffer from compulsive overeating can recover through abstinence and the practice of the 12 steps and 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. I will now ask Mara Z to read the 12 steps. Please read, Mara.
Thank you, Tina. Covered in Virginia, 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, we admitted we were powerless over food, that our lives had become unmanageable. 2, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. 3, made the decision to turn our will and our lives over to the care of God as we understood him. 4, made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. 5, admitted to God, to ourselves, and to another human being the exact nature of our wrongs. 6, were entirely ready to have God remove all these defects of character. 7, humbly asked him to remove our shortcomings. 8, made a list of all persons we had harmed, and became willing to make amends to them all. 9, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. 10, continued to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. 11, sought through prayer and meditation to improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And 12, having had a spiritual awakening, as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message to compulsive overeaters and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Thank you for letting me do service, and I pass.
Thanks so much, Mara Z. And now I will ask Letty G to read the 12 traditions. Please read, Letty.
Good morning. I'm Letty, and I'm currently in California. And these are the 12 traditions of Overeaters Anonymous. 1, our common welfare should come first. Personal recovery depends upon OA unity. 2, for our group purpose, there is but one ultimate authority, a loving God as he may express himself in our group conscience. Our leaders are but trusted servants. They do not govern. 3, the only requirement for OA membership is a desire to stop eating compulsively. 4, each group should be autonomous except in matters affecting other groups or OA as a whole. 5, each group has but one primary purpose, to carry its message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. 6, an OA group I never endorse, finance, or lend the OA name to any related facility or outside enterprise. Lest problems with money, property, or prestige divert us from our primary purpose. 7. Every OA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. 8. Overeaters Anonymous should remain forever non-professional, but our service centers may employ special workers. 9. OA as such ought never be organized, but we may create service boards and committees directly responsible to those they serve. 10. Overeaters Anonymous has no opinion on outside issues, hence the OA name ought never be drawn into public controversy. 11. Our public relations policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We need always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, films, television, and other public media of communication. And 12. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all these traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Thank you for allowing me to do service, and I pass. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Letty G. How our meeting works. Our meeting focuses on the directions for recovery described in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. We read a paragraph or two from the literature, then stop and share on what was read. Anyone can share, but we ask that you keep your sharing to the topic and literature we are discussing, and that you keep your share to approximately 3 minutes. Singleness of purpose reminds us to identify as compulsive overeaters only. Our abstinence requirement for moderators is 1 year and for readers is 6 months. There is no abstinence requirement for sharing on topic. This meeting does request that your sharing be directly linked to what was read. We are sharing what the directions in the Big Book mean to us. To share, press star 1 to unmute. Once you're done sharing, let us know by saying pass, then press star 1 to mute your phone. In order to have a quiet meeting, everyone's phone except the speaker should be muted. Today we resume our study of the Big Book. We are on page 41 in the chapter More About Alcoholism, and I will now ask Julie G. to get us started. Please read, Julie.
Thank you, Tina. This is Julie G. I went to my hotel and leisurely dressed for dinner. As I crossed the threshold of the dining room, the thought came to mind that it would be nice to have a couple of cocktails with dinner. That was all, nothing more. I ordered a cocktail and my meal. Then I ordered another cocktail. After dinner, I decided to take a walk. When I returned to the hotel, it struck me a highball would be fine before going to bed. So I stepped into the bar and had one. I remember having several more that night and plenty next morning. I have a shadowy recollection of being in an airplane bound for New York and of finding a friendly taxicab driver at the landing field instead of my wife. The driver escorted me about for several days. I know little of where I went or what I said and did. Then came the hospital with unbearable mental and physical suffering. I'm Julie G. I'm a compulsive overeater, recovered in Pennsylvania. I appreciate deeply the story of Fred and all the stories in this chapter. By no means do I think this is an exhaustive list of the varieties of the mental twist. But it does illustrate some of them. And I guess the writers, believe that Fred's story was illustrative in a way that may be useful to us. And I think it is. We do see right from drink number one, I ordered a cocktail and my meal, to the phenomenon of craving, to the spree, to the end where he is crashing down. We don't know if he's remorseful yet or not, but he is suffering. And in that last sentence, it reminded me of page 22. And so I'm just going to read that just because it just came to mind as I read it, this, and studied it last night. And that I do believe that the God of my understanding sort of brings things to mind. On page 22, why does he behave like this? if hundreds of experiences have shown him that one drink means another debacle with all its attendant suffering and humiliation, why is it he takes that one drink? Or for me, bite. And what I know now is that I have a spiritual malady. That's why. It's not my circumstances. It's not what I'm thinking. It's not what I do or don't do. I have this spiritual disease. I have the primary symptom on page 44. If when I honestly want to, I find that I cannot quit entirely, or if when eating my alcoholic foods, I have little control over the amount I take, I am probably a compulsive overeater, and I am. And if that be the case, I may be suffering. I am indeed suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. And as I looked through the book, and God brought to mind different quotes, I see that in our book, we are brought back to this central fact again and again. Only a power greater than myself can save me. And I'm just so grateful for that knowledge. The work itself is an individual matter, building that relationship with God. I need to ask every day for his protection and care with complete abandon. And I did notice that almost every chapter, pretty much every chapter, ends with, is interspersed with directions that lead us for the power greater than ourselves. Thank you. And end with that. And it is a God of our understanding, and that's what I want to leave us with. Thank you, and I will pass.
Okay, thanks so much, Julie G. And now we're going to take a list of names, and although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience too. So if you've shared on Tuesday or Wednesday, please step back. And if you give me the first name, your first name, first initial of your last name, and where you're calling from, I can take some names. Who would like to share?
Charles H. from New York.
Melissa C.
Allison
B. Florida.
Melissa.
Harlan G.
S. Somebody, Tennessee.
Harlan. Somebody from Tennessee. And somebody
Robin
from last initial of R.
Allison
Robin.
B. from Florida.
Sophie S.
Rick J.
Robin
P.
You get Charles H. I said my name first.
Gotcha.
Vasa O.
Here's Vasa. Okay, let me tell you who I got. I got Charles H., Melissa C., Harlan, Robin P., Allison, Sophie, and Vasa. And if you've given me your name and I didn't hear you, please give it to me now.
Sally A.
Say it again.
Sally A.
Sally A. And was there a gentleman?
Rick J.
Rick J. Okay, let's stop there. That looks like a good line. If I got Charles H., Melissa C., Harlan, Robin P., Allison, Sophie, Bassa, Sally A., and Rick J. All right, Charles, get us started.
Stephen, thank you for your service. I'm not going to say my name again. I don't get off like that. So I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. And the disease, I want to find out so much about it. I think I wasted years trying to define the addiction. Only to find that I cannot define this addiction. It's here. I got it. Let's get it, right? Let's do something about it, y'all. Because all this why and trying to break it down and trying to be sounding like I know something. If I knew enough, I wouldn't try to break it down and define it. This addiction is the heavyweight champion in the world, and it can be arrested one day at a time based on the spiritual steps that I take. Yes, I am a compulsive overeater. Yes, it's a killing machine. That's all I need to know. I don't need to define what's going on in my mind. What are these thoughts that I'm having? I'm a human being, and I'm going to have these four character defects that will lead me back to that compulsive bite, which will eventually take me out. I work in a nonprofit, and people die every day. Somebody died yesterday in the park from this addiction. Now, it may not have been compulsive overeating, but they died from an addiction. And I get it. And it's not a game. So, you know, I don't come on here to like the addiction is more complex than a Rubik's Cube. Yeah, you may be able to solve that little thing, but this is not a little thing. It's a killing machine. You know, I surrender. Yes, sir. Yes, ma'am. Whoever got the information, can I get it? Can I apply it to my life on a daily basis? And with that, I pass. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Charles H. I think you're from New York. Okay, next we have Melissa C., and then followed by Harlan G. Please share, Melissa.
Hey, good morning, Tina. Thanks so much for your service this morning. I'm Melissa C. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. I live in New York. And, you know, this whole story is what it looks like when we try to keep on guard, you know. And I can really relate to this because I have had this experience where, you know, there was nothing going wrong. In fact, everything was going perfect. And, you know, my experience was I came into Overeaters Anonymous in my early 20s. I thought that people there were a little crazy, but they had some good information for me in terms of allergy of the body. And I took it and I ran with that because I believed that I had enough power within me to keep on guard. And the problem is I can't keep on guard because just like him, that thought coming to mind, well, I can't control what comes to my mind. And that thought that comes into my mind is, this isn't a big deal. I'm making too big a deal about this. And so me in my early 20s, mid-20s, on my honeymoon, I looked around, I saw other normal-sized people. I was a normal-sized person at that point. I had lost a lot of weight, being entirely abstinent, but not forming a relationship with God, right? I didn't think that I needed to go quite that far as the rest of you people. And on that day, I decided I was going to have a frozen tropical drink, you know, like every other honeymooning couple. And what's crazy or what's not crazy is what followed afterwards. What followed afterwards is the consequences of having an allergic response, which means for me, I gained a tremendous amount of weight, right? I could not stop eating no matter what. I could not get back on that food plan. That part wasn't crazy. What's crazy is that fast forward years later, in an insane situation, but again, trying to rely on human power, I had been making a start in this program of recovery, and I picked up the same exact thing in almost the same exact situation because I thought that I had the power to keep on guard. And, you know, what would be, like, this statement that I thought it would be nice. Yeah, because I can't finish up the following thought, you know, followed by complete demoralization, followed by, you know, eating until your mouth bleeds. I mean, that's where this disease takes me. The only thing that can truly keep me on guard is to have a relationship with God, because God, for me, has removed that thought entirely that wouldn't it be nice. Today, I know I'm out of time, wouldn't it be nice to be useful? And with that, I'll pass. Thanks.
Thanks so much, Melissa C. from New York. Next, we have Harlan G., followed by Robin P. Please share, Harlan.
Thanks, Tina. Would you, when you give me my warning, please don't be subtle about it. I'm not inside, I'm outside. I'm Harlan G. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater, and I live in Scottsdale, Arizona. The story of Fred is in the book to illustrate for us the atypical image we have of the alcohol, not the atypical, the different image we have of the alcoholic. We see an alcoholic in our mind and he's laying in the gutter in a trench coat. No, that's not Fred. No, that's not most of us. That's not most of us. We're also given to think about what triggers the physical allergy. And we're told repeatedly that the physical allergy is triggered by the ingestion of the foods that we eat that we are allergic to, or the ingredients that we're allergic to. But what about the mental twist? What activates the mental twist? Well, in a word, breathing. Because Dr. Silkworth tells us on page XXVIII of the Big Book that men and women drink essentially because they like the effect produced by alcohol. The sensation is so elusive that while they admit it's injurious, they cannot, after a time, differentiate the true from the false. He also tells us that this effect is something that we will chase right into our graves. He doesn't say it in those words. I'm paraphrasing. But he also tells us that when we're not drinking, we're restless, irritable, and discontented. Throw in scared to death, angry as hell, jealous, happy, euphoric. See, Fred is here to illustrate for us that we don't have an image that's accurate. Everything is going right for Fred. He's on top of the world. Everything is going his way. I have eaten railroad cars full of Almond Joy bars and railroad cars full of pizza when things went well for me. I can't count the number of times things went well for me and I quote unquote celebrated with food. So you think, well, if everything's going well for you, you won't eat. No, 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 no. Were that it were so simple. Were that it were so simple. As he crossed the threshold of the dining room, the thought came to mind that it would be nice to have a couple of cocktails with dinner. That was all, nothing more. So the mental twist has him ordering a cocktail with his meal. Now, this is plain damn insanity. And we have been shown illustrations of insanity throughout this chapter. He has been in an asylum. He has been in trouble. He's ordering a cocktail with dinner. Is he crazy? Yes. Well, he says, all of a sudden after dinner, he takes a walk. What do you think he was obsessing about on the walk? More liquor.
Time,
because
Marlon.
He has now triggered the physical allergy. Okay, and he gets drunk and not such good things happen. Thanks, Tina, for your service. And with that, I will pass.
Thanks so much, Harlan G. from Arizona. Next, we have Robin P., followed by Allison. Please share, Robin.
Thank you so much for this meeting. I'm Robin P., and I'm a very grateful recovered compulsive overeater in Franklin, Tennessee. Thank you so much for your service. Oh, wow, such great share, so much power. You know, I was just thinking about this human dilemma without God, and I was thinking about good orderly direction and what the opposite of that is, you know, that hell and mayhem, listening to the other voice. And, you know, and how sad that must have been for his wife, and she went to pick him up. But, you know, just all the other people around the alcoholic or the compulsive overeater who just are so powerless as well. And against that voice, and it was like, take me to your leader. And I had no. I would just be like this zombie, you know, okay, there I am, Russian roulette. And I have a no. I don't, thank God, I have neutrality with the food one day at a time. Thank you, Lord God. But I just didn't have a no. If the voice said do that, that's what I did. And you know, I remember being so afraid to eat anything. Just I couldn't even one bite of something. I was a very low bottom bulimic, and I was tried anorexia, but I missed the high too much from the bulimia. And I was a compulsive reader. I was everything. And it was hell. It was hell alone in a room with my God at the time, which was food, which failed me miserably. And all the people who tried to help me and who looked at me with that face. People don't look at me with that face anymore, thank you, God. These 10 years, by God's grace and mercy, one day at a time, people look at me with gratitude and love, and people call me angel. Like, wow, it's not even the same person.
Now, I am not the same person today because of all of you and because of these 12 steps. And, you know, I was listening last night to a meeting where someone shared that religiously, even now in recovery, all these years later, she still makes 3 outreach calls every day. And I just really pray that I up my outreach calls. I think it's such a blessing to hear what happened to her by doing that. And so I'm making that commitment on this line. God bless everybody with a really blessed abstinence day, and I pass.
Thanks so much, Robin P. from Tennessee. Next, we have Allison, followed by Sophie. Please share, Allison, and tell us where you're calling from. Give me the initial of your last name.
Hi, my name's Allison B., calling from Florida. I'm a compulsive overeater. I wanted to share what came to mind when I was hearing this paragraph was that I have had those thoughts, especially when things are going well, like, oh, I had a wonderful evening with my husband. Oh, my child is well behaved at a playgroup. You know, it would be the top of this, what would be so wonderful if I could just sit down and eat what they're eating without any sort of weighing or measuring, or yeah, and then that'll just flow right into, did we want to try a little dessert? Oh, that would be just so wonderful. And that would put the cap on this beautiful, perfect idea of a family that I have. But I am so thankful for this program and for this meeting that I hear the stories of the relapse that are shared with such vulnerability that tell me, don't listen to that thought. Yes, I'm looking and searching for ease and comfort. Even in a moment when ease and comfort is there, I want more because I'm realizing that I'm an addict, even for ease and comfort. And I'm just so thankful that I have this meeting and people sharing their experiences that allow me to say, don't do it. But that's not the only thing I have. I also have this relationship that I'm forming with a higher power that is allowing me to feel my feelings and be uncomfortable and to check in and say, okay, why do I feel uncomfortable? Because the food's not there anymore and I had to put it down. And the last thought that I wanted to share that came to me about this paragraph was, oh my goodness, I'm doing the same thing with my schedule. I have this ease and comfort. I'm recovering. I'm doing my steps. I'm on step 4. I'm feeling kind of grimy about being in step 4, working through it quickly. But then I'm looking at my schedule and I thought, how did my schedule get so overpacked? And I made a commitment when I started the steps, don't overpack your schedule. You're making these choices. And I feel like I'm finally realizing my higher power is trying to say, talk to me before you make a commitment, even about your schedule, not just about your food, but also about your schedule, because your schedule is becoming something else that I'm trying to rely on. And I can't do that. I cannot rely on myself. I have to rely on my higher power. And I just wanted to share that revelation with everyone here on the line. And with that, I'll pass.
Thanks so much, Allison B. from Florida. Next, we have Sophie, followed by Vasa O. Sophie, please give me the initial of your last name and where you're calling from.
Hey, everybody. This is Sophie S. I'm calling in from East Tennessee. I'm a compulsive overeater. Really grateful to be here with all of you today. And just so grateful for this big book, because sometimes I just have to laugh. I think about, you know, where I was at mentally before I got into this program. And if you would have told me that I would be identifying with, you know, some guy from the 1940s, I would have been like, yeah, okay, but I can, because I'm a garden variety, you know, compulsive overeater, and I'm not special. And the same things that happened to him here have happened to me so many times. I think about this, like the number of times that I got abstinent, I cleaned up my food. The word there is I wasn't relying on anybody else but self. You know, I'm never going to do that again. I'm never going to throw up again. I'm never going to do all those things. And being really resolute in that. And then you all would tell me, you know, it doesn't matter how you feel right now. There will come a time where you think the food is a good idea again if you don't have a spiritual solution. And I was kind of like, okay, that might be the case for all of you, but I'm different. I've got better willpower. I can handle this. And the number of times where like has been previously shared, being on a vacation and wanting to, you know, experience the culture and eat a food that I have no business eating, or, you know, being at a birthday party and
feeling like I'm being rude by not participating and just thinking that enough time has gone by that I won't react the same way that I've reacted every other time I've put those things in my body. And I always thought that the problem was like the third or fourth container. Like if I could just have one, everything would be fine. I never understood that it was the one that would set me up to be like finishing everything that I had and then going out to the grocery store to get more. I could not comprehend that, you know, it was the first one. And I'm just so grateful that I'm not there today. And that's not because of anything that I have done. It is through like surrendering to this program and to listening to someone else's directions for a change and, you know, turning my will and life over to my God, to God as I understand God. And I'm just so grateful that I don't have to be here, be there today. And those moments will pop up where, you know, the food may sound like a good idea because I'm a compulsive overeater, but I have a program now and a higher power of my own understanding. And it's just, I'm so, so incredibly grateful for that. But that's all I got. I pass. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks so much, Sophie S. from Tennessee. Next, we have Vasa O., followed by Sally A. Please share, Vasa.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Tina, for your service. And I want to apologize because I was supposed to read the 12 steps this morning, and I forgot all about it. So thank you for the person that just put up for me. But anyways, Tina, could you please time me? Because sometimes I lose my time. So, yes, I am Vasa, recovering compulsive overeater, calling from Foxboro, Massachusetts. And, yes, I appreciate Fred's story, and I appreciate Bill's story. I appreciate how the program works. I appreciate the doctor's opinion. I had no clue, no understanding about the food addiction until I came to my first meeting. I didn't know about the disease. I didn't know about the allergy. I had no clue. And I've been suffering with the food addiction for 25 years of my life. And I did everything I could control it. And I'm saying, well, this is it. This is, I'm just going to get it. And I'm going to stick with it. And I never did. And I always went back to it. I was never hospitalized. And there is a lot of, you know, now they have a lot of treatments for food addictions. And like Fred, I was pretty good. You know, I had the boyfriend, I had the husband, I had the house, children gradually, but I could not put the food down. And it was getting progressively worse. And it's not like I didn't try. I experimented. I counted calories. I measured. I weighed. I did everything in my own willpower, but none of it worked. And then here I come to the program. I don't see any scales over there. They not give me diets. They gave me the pamphlet or go to a doctor or go get a nutritionist, you know, about the food, you know, what to eat. I knew the sugars, well, that was the biggest problem for me. I love the effects, as it says in the big book. I love the effects when I ate the sugars. And even though I knew it was ruining my body and it was killing me, but I couldn't stop. So here I come in Overeaters Anonymous. I found the allergy of the body, the obsession, and I needed to find a power greater than myself. And I said, I will do whatever it takes. I will surrender. Because I did surrender to the food before I came to the program. There was nothing more left. Now I had to learn something different. I needed to surrender to a power greater than myself with the food addiction because there was no power left in me to control it any longer. And that was the trick, to surrender to a power greater than myself. And I did, and I'm so grateful. And then I threw myself in the program, the steps, whatever, you know. And it is by the grace of God. I became MAP student from the night. Thank you. Thank you. And I'll share more later. Thank you. And I'll pass it to you.
Thanks so much, Fossa O from Massachusetts. Next, we have Sally A, followed by Rick J. Please, Sally. Please share, Sally. Thanks.
Thank you, Julie. Good morning, everyone. It's Sally A, currently in Texas, but I live in New York. So this is such a great chapter. This really explains what's going on in our brain so vividly. He tells us that the thought crossed his mind. And of course, impulsively, because that's what we have for starters in our brain, is this impulse disorder. And he goes on down the page. I decided to take a walk after already having a few cocktails. When I returned to the hotel, it struck me. The thought struck him. A highball would be fine before going to bed. Bedtime is a real problem for a lot of people because we're tired. That whole halt, hungry, angry, lonely, tired. We're tired and we're not thinking so straight to begin with. And that's why it's so important for us to put ourselves to bed at a reasonable time, because a lot goes wrong for a lot of people in the program at bedtime in the late hours of their day. I remember having several more that night. He's telling us mentally he's barely remembering what happened. He has a shadowy recollection. So you can see that he's absolutely going out of his mind at this point. His memory is going. So something is going on here mentally that does not happen with average people, with the hard eater. It's different for us who are really have this mental disorder, this mental twist. He goes on to say, I know little of where I went or what I said and did. Very sad. That is exactly what happens to us. We go into such a brain fog from the food. And then he says, I came to the hospital with unbearable mental, and notice he puts mental first and physical suffering second, because it is mental first and then physical second. And lucky him, he gets to go to a hospital and get locked up. I've always said, I wish I could have been chained to a radiator like a werewolf and made it through the night that way, you know, crying, you know, the, And then finally he says, as soon as I regain my ability to think, yes, I'm bleeding into the next paragraph because we're seeing the full sway of what happened. Holy mackerel, his brain is succumbing unfogged. And this, you know, I have to tell you that I'm babysitting for this 15 and 14-year-old grandchildren in Dallas or Frisco. And three dogs and two cats, and it's been quite the challenge. Only day one has passed, and my granddaughter was sitting and looking through my phone at pictures, and she saw through the years me gain 100 pounds, me skinny, lost 100 pounds, me again gain 100 pounds in this program because I'm so willful. Just let me finish, then lose the 100, and then gain the 100 in 2 years ago, start again and lose the 100. And she was shocked, eye-opening. We get to see it. They don't really see what we see, and they need to see it. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks so much, Sally A. from New York. And before we hear from Rick, let me just tell you all where we're reading from. If you've come on late, we are on page 41. In the chapter More About Alcoholism, the first paragraph, starting with, I went to my hotel and leisurely dressed, ending with unbearable mental and physical suffering. And Rick, please share with us.
Hey, good morning, Tina. Thanks so much for your service. I'm Rick J. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you. We can hear you.
Okay, so thanks for your service, Tina. My name is Rick J. I'm a recovered compulsive overeater in North Carolina. And it's good to be on the line. I just wanted to check in with everybody. I've been going through some pain and getting ready to have my shoulder replacement surgery on Monday. And not sleeping well and sleeping late and not able to be on live meetings usually. But, you know, this right here, I love the shares. And, you know, what really strikes me is that you know, this disease, this compulsive eating, for me, it's like a parasite that I didn't ask for, but it's a part of me. And this parasite has its little tentacles just wrapped around my mind and the chemistry of my brain. So my thinking is connected to this addiction parasite. And there's this really unique ability that it has. It can put a thought in my mind that makes sense to me. You know, suddenly the thought crossed my mind that, you know, milk in the whiskey, yeah, or whiskey in the milk. and the, you know, nice to have a couple of cocktails with dinner. So that thinking, it's insane, right? That it is. It's strangely insane. So I can hear this thought, this first thought that comes racing through, and it makes perfect sense to me. And at the same time, the memory of what happened before is magically erased, the strange mental blank spot. So I've got a loss of memory and an implanted thought that takes me right to my addiction. And that's the real power of my addiction. And the other thing is, it's just that, you know, sometimes I'm just like zombied out, you know, it's like there's nothing. And in the mechanics, I've just, you know, confined myself eating. That's really scary. You know, it's almost like I lose control of my body and the things that I want to do, and I lose my thinking, or I have a crazy thought supplanted in there. And, you know, trying to overcome that on my own without a power greater than myself, you know, Charles mentioned, you know, it's like the heavyweight champ of the world. It's like me getting in the ring, you know, with Muhammad Ali and Mike Tyson, who are tag teaming each other, and I get in there thinking I'm going to kick some ass, you know, and that's another gift of this parasite addiction. It's like this belief that I can do it on my own. So I'm just so grateful that I have you guys and I have my higher power, because that's what saves me. I can't just live knowing that I'm powerless and that a power greater than myself can save me. I have to be in the action, and I have to enlarge my spiritual life. That I pass.
Thanks so much, Rick J., and lots of prayers for your surgery on Monday. Okay, before we take another, actually, we could take probably about three more. And although we value your experience, we ask that you limit your share to every third day so that others may share their experience. So if you've shared on Tuesday or Wednesday, please step back. If you give me your first name, initial of your last name, and where you're calling from, I could take three people.
Well, Michelle Murphy, Arizona. Michelle M.
I got Terry and Michelle. Missed some people.
Russ M.
Russ. All righty. Actually, I think now that you said that, I heard Russ first. So let's go with Russ, Terry, and Michelle. Please share, Russ.
And this is Dorita. I tried to unmute, but go.
Good morning, Dina. Thanks for everything. What a great meeting. Great shares. So this disease absolutely bludgeoned me. Just beat the snot out of me.
Oh,
beat me
okay.
Up, beat me up pretty good. And you know, that mental anguish, the physical part, not being able to do much. It like Rick said, was, it had tentacles, man. It destroyed my whole life. And the insane thinking became sane thinking. I just, this paragraph, like, just reminds me how bad it was and how bad it could still be, and it could be even worse. My life is predicated on working these steps, on just living this way of life. And that's the only way I've ever been free. I blew hundreds of thousands of dollars, and that's no exaggeration, on pills, potions, lotions, clothes, fat clothes, skinny clothes, gyms, all these silver bullets that were going to save me, and nothing did until I was at the worst part of my life possibly. And this last week I was blessed to go out of the country for vacation. And I had to be that guy. Things had to be cooked this way, that, this and that, my portion. But you know what? I got to enjoy my surroundings. I wasn't in oblivion. I wasn't that compulsive overeating Iron Man that would blow through things and just be stuck in the room or high all the time. You know, I was blessed because of this way of life. And, you know, for anybody that's battling, you could get free. You just got to do what your sponsor says, work the steps, and like pray your tail off, and surrender it. And I just wanted to share that because there's hope and there's freedom as long as we're working this way of life, living this way of life in all aspects. And it's not an easy thing because you do feel things a lot when you're not getting high. But we have our solution. So thanks for letting me share. Thanks, Ian. Love you guys.
Thanks so much, Rossam. I think you're from PA. And next we have Terry, followed by Michelle. Terry, please give me an initial of your last name and where you're calling from.
This is Sherry S. in Wisconsin.
Sherry.
All
right.
Yeah.
Please share, Sherry.
Thank you. You know, the thought crossed my mind. I still have, on occasion, those thoughts that cross my mind. And what is, I find funny about that is it's usually about something that I refused to give up for decades because I didn't think it was a problem. It's, you know, this sugar-free beverage. And I'm like, that's the first thing that crosses my mind. And what I find funny about that is I adamantly said it wasn't a problem for me, but I wasn't able to put down the food. And finally, someone said, you know, maybe you want to put this thing down. And I'm like, that's not a problem. So that's usually the first thing that crosses my mind is that beverage. But what's different today is I can follow that thought all the way through and know that if I were to drink that or eat something that's got that sugar-free thing in it, it's going to send me back on the rails because God has gifted me the memory of what that feels like to go back into the food. The last time I went back into the food, I was at my niece's wedding and I'm like, oh, I'm just going to have a piece of cake to celebrate her wedding. I gained 150 pounds from that one piece of cake. So the piece that I need to remember is I have no control over that. God gifted me the abstinence, and that includes that sugar-free beverage that comes in my mind. So my mind is normal for a compulsive overeater. The thought will cross my mind, but if I'm fit spiritually, it literally is a passing thought, and I'm okay with that because God takes that thought away. It comes, it goes, I'm staying food neutral because I'm spiritually connected. If I'm not spiritually connected, I'm an I, and I'm in trouble. So with that, I'm going to pass. Thank you.
Oh, sorry about that. I was on mute. Thanks so much, Sherry S. from Wisconsin. I was talking away. Next, we have Michelle. Give you the initial of your last name, where you're calling from, and then we'll have time for Dorita P. Please share, Michelle.
Well, good morning, Tina. Thank you for your service and everyone else who makes this meeting possible. I am Michelle M. I am a recovered compulsive eater in Arizona. And what I really got out of this paragraph this morning is more visual. So there he is. He's outside the bar and he's thinking, what, this would be a really good idea. And he crosses the threshold. So he literally is going, he is crossing the threshold from the power of choice to no choice, because that's what happens. Once I cross the threshold and pick up, I have 100% lost the power of choice, you know, and nobody closed that door to walk to back out of the bar. If I had choice and rational thought, I could have backed myself up, but I can't, because once I make that decision, I have lost the power of choice, you know, and I know what it was like. My memory is very, very clear, but I don't care. See, that's the thing. I don't care about the consequences in that moment because I am in 100% in the disease. And what I know today is that the disease is a life form. And like any life form, will fight for its survival. It's not it's, and that's literally what it is. And once I cross the threshold, I cannot go back. So this is highly metaphorical to me. And, you know, and what happens is I get to that place to where I wake up in complete demoralization. And I am going to keep doing that no matter what the consequences, until I surrender. You know, it says in the 12:12, who cares who would meet to feed? Who cares to make amends and do all that? Nobody. So if I'm happy, if I'm sad, external circumstances don't matter. It's got nothing to do with external circumstances. It's all the disease thinking in my brain that gets a hold of me before I take that first compulsive bite. So through the grace of God and the steps, when I get to that threshold of a thought, I know to back up. I know to pray for the feeling for it to pass. I do 10 steps. And I'm so grateful to be abstinent and in recovery today, no matter what is going on in my life. And with that, I pass.
Thanks so much, Michelle M. from Arizona. And next, our last share, Dorita, would you like to share? You have about 3 minutes. Dorita P. Star one.
Yes, ma'am. I would love to. My name is Dorita Pippen. I'm from Cleveland, Ohio. I'm really grateful to be here. It's a privilege and honor to be at a meeting of Overeaters Anonymous. Everybody did not get this opportunity for whatever reason. So I'm really grateful I have to be here. That thinking. Boy, that thinking, that thinking is something. Boy, that my thinking is something and the devil is something. I got a friend of mine who says, you know, that her man is out to get her. You know, and that's true. You know, my man is out to get me. I cannot rely on it. Boy, I cannot rely on it. So I'm just really, really grateful for this program, and thank you for allowing me to share. And I'm going to end it right there, Tina. Thank you so much for letting me share.
Thanks so much, Dorita P. from Ohio. Okay, we got about 2 minutes if anybody wants it, would like to share for 2 minutes on this paragraph.
Elaine S.
Go ahead, Elaine.
Thank you. This is Elaine S. from New York. I was going to wait till tomorrow to share, but I just have to do it today. One thing that I don't hear said often enough, though occasionally, is that everything is going perfectly for Fred. So why does he pick up? And to me is, no matter how wonderful things are going, when God is not there, there's something missing. We're looking to be filled up. We're looking to feel whole. And that is a God-sized hole, as some people have the term some people use. It's, you know, when I go to God, I can be full. My heart is full. And this program has shown me how to do this. I'm so full of gratitude to all of you. Every morning, I'm usually at the 10 o'clock meeting, but I'm up a little earlier today. And I'm just so grateful for this program that has definitely transformed my life. Definitely a spiritual awakening. And I pass. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Elaine S. from New York. And thank you to everyone who shared. Please join us for a second unrecorded hour of study immediately following closing and our share ID for today, which is Thursday, May the 28th, 2026, is for the 7 a.m. Eastern Time meeting, 23,499. That's 23499. We will now close with the reading from the Big Book on page 164, followed by the Serenity Prayer. And I will now ask Zoe N. to read A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. Keep you until then. Please read, Zoe.
Good morning, Zoe N., compulsive overeater from New Mexico. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you until then.